It's a pleasure to be with you this morning, and I have the tough job to follow two great speakers that you've already had last night and this morning. But I want to share some things with you from a little different perspective that I think you'll find useful. We've talked already in this conference a lot about change and what that means, which is tough for some of us that have a little more gray hair. And especially when times are great like they are now in the Angus business, we would certainly like them to stay the same. We'd certainly like things to just continue like they are. But one thing we do know for sure, we may not be able to predict the future perfectly, but we do know that it won't be the same as today. And I too was thinking about that penguin picture, Randy. And I guess I wondered how many people dreamed about that picture last night. And if you did, were you the penguin holding the symbols, or were you the polar bear sleeping and on the receiving end or the giving end of that? Sometimes in this business, I would have liked to have been that third penguin. If you remember the picture, there was another one standing over there. Now, that would be a really fun position to be in, because you'd kind of get to sit back and watch the action that was about to occur. But, you know, unfortunately, if we're involved in this business, fortunately and unfortunately, really, we don't have that opportunity. We're part of this business, and most of us, I think, still want to be in this business 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, or we'd like to see the family history of our operation continue. And so we need to deal with the challenges and changes ahead. And that's what I'm going to talk with you about this morning. Is my specific topic is this, the future of Angus beef, but I'm going to tie that into, in terms of our supply chain, what that means to us as producers. I'm a cattle feeder, and so I'll talk a lot about the cattle feeder's perspective in this. And I think it is safe to say that probably the future is going to be both better and maybe a little worse, or at least more challenging than what we might tend to think. But it will be different, and we need to get ourselves prepared for that, for sure. So let's talk a little bit about the future of Angus beef. But before I do that, I want to give you some quick history on my company so you know where I'm coming from. That is more known would be Conti Beef. Back in May of this year, we merged our business with Smithfield, the old Montfort feedlots that Smithfield had owned for about 6 months. We created a very big, in fact, the largest cattle feeding business in the world, with 10 feed yards, 811,000 head of capacity. We operate in five different states, and we do market cattle to the majority of the major packers. And we do sell an awful lot of cattle on grids as well, in formulas. That would be the typical way that we sell cattle, and so we have a lot of familiarity with the carcass value and really what creates value, not only in the feeding segment, but certainly on the rail as well. Let me give you just a quick overview of some of what we consider to be our cornerstone philosophies and the way that we approach our business. It's a business with a ton of risk in it. And in fact, right now, you know, if there's anybody that has that a little of that extra jingle in their pocket that Randy was talking about, that they want to buy $1.15 yearlings with me, just let me know after this is over. We can certainly use the help, because it is a business with a lot of risk. We do focus on the production end of the business. We have large feedlots. The average size would be about 80,000 head in one-time capacity. We work hard on our cash trading, and what I mean by that is that the buy, in terms of procurement of cash commodities, corn and everything else in the ration, as well as the feeder cattle, we work hard on those things. We try to be effective incrementally in doing a good job buying those commodities. Also on the marketing side, we work hard, and that's become an increased focus over time. We have a very major emphasis on risk management, and that's where I spend obviously the majority of my time. A $1 per hundredweight change in the value of fed cattle affects the value of our inventory by $9 or $10 million. So every little incremental move in the market, you know, can keep me up at night, and it's a big, big deal to the bottom line of a cattle feeder in a very narrow margin business, and a business that has a lot of volatility. So I think you have to be, Randy said you have to have a short memory to be in his business. You have to be about half crazy and have a stomach of steel probably to be in my business. We also work hard to develop our people and really put a lot of energy into people, because at the end of the day, all businesses are just people and some physical assets. That's really all you have. And so we work hard to develop our people. In the Conti beef system, the six feed yards that we had prior to the merger, and of course they're still part of the system today, four of those managers, four of the general managers of those six operations are under 40 years of age. And so we have had a consistent history of trying to really grow our people professionally, give them a lot of experiences in the business, and then promote from within. And I think if you look at the majority of our assistant managers across those 10 feed yards, most all of them would be in their upper 20s to low 30s. So we do have a pretty young group. It's an aggressive group, and it's a group that essentially we have trained and grown from within. Increasingly, we're doing a couple of other things, and this ties very nicely into the topic this morning. Increasingly, in our business, we are emphasizing value-added beef programs. It's become a real part of our business. It's something we don't any longer just talk about. It's something we actually are involved in, and I will share some more things as we go through on that. And the further thing that we're trying to work on that ties to that is to segment our inventory, because we have a very large inventory, and when you're a big cattle feeder, you tend to get pretty average pretty quick in terms of your buy. I like to feed Angus influenced cattle a great deal. All of our people do. But when you have as many feed yards to fill as we do, not every animal that you buy will be that ideal feeder steer. And so we are working increasingly to look to segment our population and maximize the value of each portion of that inventory. I want to also show you kind of a perspective that puts those pieces together in this pyramid. And this is critical, I think, in all levels of the business. Whether you're a commercial producer that's here, Angus seed stock producer, or a feedlot producer like myself, this basic philosophy, I think, serves you well now, and it'll serve you well in the future. And that is, the foundation of the pyramid is still those old principles that we learned in the commodity business. We've got to have low cost, and we've got to be very efficient. And now that we're going more into the value-added side of that pyramid, it doesn't mean that the base is going away. That line between those two segments of that pyramid is an and. It's not an or. We don't do one or the other. And in our business, we very much see it as an and. We don't think we can thrive in the future. We maybe can survive, but that's probably even questionable. But we certainly can't thrive if we rely just on those foundational principles. We've got to look at adding value, creating more opportunity with the inventory we have, managing more value into our cattle, figuring out market systems that help capture that, and on it goes. And I think you're where we are. I think you're where we are as well. There's some basic production principles that are critical in your business, and they don't go away. You can't invert that pyramid and get along, in my opinion. It's got to be an and between both production efficiency and, now more and more in this business, added value and capturing more top line. So let's talk about the future of Angus beef, and I call this a more or less evaluation. A more or less evaluation of Angus beef, and what I mean by that is, what things are we going to see more of in the future, and what things may we see less of as well. And also I want to hit on who are going to be some of the winners, who are going to be some of the losers, and what about the impact on the industry overall as we look at the future of Angus beef? Sometime I'll figure out which direction to point this. My first item on the more side of things is I think we'll see more of the same regarding Angus beef popularity, which is very good news for everybody in this room. I think it's very clear that Angus holds the dominant position, and because you're associated, that name is associated with high quality. There's nothing really in the works that'll knock that off. And let's put a few numbers around that. Let's look back at some quick history and look at certified Angus beef. You all know that CAB started in 1978, and that was eventually what eventually became the earthquake that revolutionized the beef business in so many ways, and now is creating some aftershocks that you all have to deal with. But today, if you look at USDA certified branded beef programs, there's 51 of them if you go to the website and pull off the list, and 35 of those, or just almost 70%, use the name Angus. And in fact, if you look more recently, just in the last basically year and a half, 2004 and to date in 2005, there's been the introduction of 15 more new certified beef brands, and 14 of those, or almost all of them, have also used the name Angus. Now here's something that's interesting as well. Look who all is using the name Angus in their beef brands, and of course this goes well beyond CAB. I'm looking at the Packer segment now, and virtually all of these Packers are licensed providers, marketers of CAB, and work with your CAB group out of Ohio. But they also have many of their own, as you know, many of their own Angus brands. And I just did a quick list there, and you'll see all the major Packers and a few of the smaller ones that are on there as well, plus some major distributors in Sysco and American Food Group as well. Even Walmart has an Angus brand. So this is something in our system that has incredibly broad penetration. And I look at this like this. In your situation, you ought to view what's going on as extremely favorable, even though it is, of course, competition for CAB. But it is extremely favorable because every one of these large entities are heavily vested in your success. They have a lot on the line related to the ongoing success of Angus beef. And that puts you in a very good position because, in a sense, and I don't think this is much of a stretch to say, these very well-capitalized, hardworking groups that really are the beef industry above us, above the feeding level, they are invested in your success, and they're working for your success. And that puts the Angus community in an extremely good position going forward. You can look at that one level up to the consumer level, and you can go every time I do this, Randy, I wish they'd have had the internet when I was in school. You know, I'd have been able to spend a lot more time playing pickup basketball and other things that were a lot of fun if they'd have had the internet to do research when I was in college. But if you'll go there and if you'll look at some of the consumer level use of the word Angus, it's everywhere. It's all over. And I know you're familiar with many of these names. Look at Don Shula at the top to just on and on. Burger King and many names that we're familiar with. Again, these firms, very well capitalized, working hard to make sure that Angus beef is successful because, of course, they're tied to it as well. So Angus beef is everywhere, and it certainly is not a reach to say that Angus is the most recognized name in beef branding. I don't think there's any question about that. I told a couple of you this story. I'll tell it again. While I've been here, I'll tell it again. I was fishing in Alaska just a little over a year ago, and we were out in the river about 100 miles north of Anchorage, and it's one of those things when the drug company paid for the trip, and so it was a pretty fun trip, and we had guides and everything, and we're standing out there, and I got to visiting with my guide, and he was a young guy, probably 20, in his low 20s, I would say, from Portland, Oregon, and of course, we visited for a while, and he found out that I was in the cattle business, and he says, he looks at me, and just totally out of the blue, he looks at me, and he says, "Now, Angus beef is best, isn't it?" And I assured him that it was, I did my part. So the point is, of course, you know, it's everywhere. The penetration of that word into the consumer mind is very, very deep. It goes through so much of our society. It's important in the export markets as well. And so it's a tremendous thing in terms of just your position of leadership in the branded beef community. I find this interesting. Omaha Steaks. Focus on this for just a minute. Omaha Steaks is a company. How many of you are familiar with that organization? They've been around. See, most everybody, because they've been around for a long time. If you read their logo, it says they started in 1917. They've been in the mail order beef business for a long time, trying to really market high quality beef for a higher price, of course. Now, it's interesting that if you go and study up on Omaha Steaks today, you'll find that they also offer Angus steaks. And I would love to know, I don't know the history there, but it would be interesting to find out how many phone calls they took from potential customers saying, "Do you guys sell Angus beef? Do you guys sell Angus beef?" before they added it to their product list. But you can see it today, and I'll guarantee it wasn't there 10 years ago. So there's an example of just no doubt, if we knew the behind-the-scenes story, the momentum, the demand for Angus beef, pulling a long-term beef company into the circle and making them now a promoter of Angus beef. And that wasn't supposed to be the end of my slide, so I'm glad there was one behind it, Bill. Okay. Go back one. Yeah, that should be the next one. There we go. And lastly, all right, I thought I was getting censored up here. The Google search test, this was just kind of fun. I went sitting in my computer at home the other evening. I just very simply typed in the word Angus beef and counted the matches and then did the same for these other breeds. And you can see the dominance of Angus beef even there in terms of just what Google will find in terms of matches. And I do want to call your attention to one thing. If anybody in this room has a secondary breed, and it's right here, I think this is a warning signal because you actually got beat by the Scottish Highlanders. So if I were you and I had that second to the last breed on the list there, about behind my Angus, I think they would go. So the Scottish Highlanders are maybe doing pretty well there, I guess. I don't know. But the Angus dominance is easy to see as you look at that list. All right, I need my technicians going there. The second thing that I think we'll clearly see and already really are seeing more of in the future is more differentiation in terms of these Angus beef programs and the specs that go with that. I call that more granularity, more differences and more specific programs in an attempt to differentiate one from another. And that can come in a lot of different forms. The live animal requirements that go with that, marbling is an issue, and right on down the list. One area that has been extremely strong in terms of growth, new market development in recent times has been the natural beef area. We actually at Five Rivers do participate in one natural beef program, and that's been a strong area. We have sold, we kind of started out with our packer partner at a very limited number of cattle each week, and that program has grown up to, I think now it's pushing 2,000 cattle each and every week. And so that's become a very successful program over time. It's a program with a little more granularity. You have to have a certain type of cattle. They're also looking for higher grading cattle in that program and cattle that have to be managed to a very specific set of guidelines and the program specs to make it work. Tom Field last night talked about the storyline. That's the last one on my list, and he made the comment that we're in an era with, when there's so much marketing going on, there's so much competition, that the story is equally important as the product itself, or maybe even more important. And I see that as well. I would underscore that and say that Tom is exactly right, and we're seeing a strong push made in terms of developing a tagline, a story, a set of values tied to a product that really would help to differentiate that. And we're going to see more of that in the future. And I think from a producer standpoint, you can read the bottom, if you can see that bottom line there, I think there is both opportunity and risk associated with that. Not everything that glitters is gold in terms of these programs. We have looked at, in our business, a lot of these programs that simply were uneconomical. Maybe you could increase the top line by X amount, but it costs you 2x to do everything that you had to do to qualify the cattle for that program. And, of course, that doesn't work. And one of the big things is, as you really get to looking at it, you've got a population of cattle to work with. You may, and let's say you're talking about 100 head, let's say you follow the protocol and you administer and do everything you need to do on that 100 head and only 50 qualify. Well, the premium that you really receive on the whole 100 head, of course, is half of what it was overall. And so we've got to evaluate the economics of each of these programs individually as producers. And I think it's very positive. There's a lot of long-term upside that wasn't there before in terms of working with some of these programs. And I think that we have been successful in capturing some of that, and I know others have as well, but it's not without its pitfalls. Now, here's one you probably hadn't thought about. As we see the strength and dominance of the Angus brand, we are leaving in our industry. Don't be surprised if you see more room for a few strong non-Angus brands. And that's classic marketing. We see a situation where there's a strong presence, almost a ubiquitous presence, of the leader in the marketplace. But you'll see some strong seconds, too. And I don't know who those will be. I put a few of them on this slide. But don't be surprised, and probably don't be too concerned when you see this. If you see some of these other brands getting stronger and growing, it doesn't mean they're going to take over your world. It just means that there's always somebody that wants to be different and market a little different product out there than the next guy has. And the more penetration Angus beef has, and the more we see that name out there, We're also going to start to see more other brands used in various places just to be an Angus Other type product. Now, here's one that I'm pretty passionate about because it affects my business every day. I believe that we will see, as the slide says, we'll see more Angus beef produced from southern cattle and in the southern plants. Now, you may say that's as much a hope as it is a prediction of the future, and maybe it is for me, but I want to tell you what I'm thinking there. We got a big problem in this industry. Randy showed the slide that tracked our choice beef percentage for the last number of years in this business, and it was pretty flat, wasn't it? Well, here's the root of the problem right here, and it's a regional issue. If you look at the southern end of the feeding belt, which I'm capturing here with Kansas and Texas, then, of course, those geographies feed more of the southern cattle. They have a chronic grade problem. And I have a chronic grade problem because I have six feedlots in those areas. My company does. That's a big part of our business. And yet the genetic population that we can draw from is very inferior from a grade standpoint. Nobody really talks about this in our industry. Maybe it's politically incorrect to talk about this, but I'm telling you what's neat about it from your standpoint is you're sitting there with the solution to this industry problem. And it literally is a problem that is costing our industry, the southern segment of the industry, more than $160 million a year. And it's easily fixable. You know what the answer is to that. And yet it's not happening in our industry today. And so I think that's a real opportunity for you. I think that's gradually starting to be seen. These high-grading cattle do so well on southern grids. The reason is because we're compared on those grids to the plant average grade base, and our ultimate premium or discount will be dependent on how a given group of cattle sold relative to the plant average. And so if the plant average is only 40% or maybe 45%, depending on the time of year, and you send a set of 60% graders or maybe 70% graders in there, tremendous financial opportunity in doing that, and yet we just, as a genetic population in the southern areas, it's not happening. Now, the problem is easy to see, and I'm going to roll through a few slides here that I think do a pretty good job of telling you why we have such an issue with quality grade in the southern plant. And I asked Mike Betchert, who takes a picture of a lot of the cattle he buys and just kind of captures them and tracks their performance and sends a lot of that information back to their order buyers. Mike is a Grant County feeder at Ulysses, Kansas. I said, Mike, send me a few pictures of what you consider to be typical southern cattle. And so here's a few of them. The problem's easy to see. Not a lot of grade in those cattle. How about those? Same situation. How about these? Are they going to grade very well? I tell you what, there's a lot of groups that we would love to be at 40 or 50% on. I guarantee you those cattle right there, they will not get close. I mean, if they top 30% choice, that's going to be about it. And it wouldn't surprise me if they were somewhere way down in the 20s. Here's another set. And another set, those cattle, a little better feeding quality cattle. They won't grade very well. And here's a little better, I went too fast there. Here's a little better set of cattle. So what do all these genetics need? I'm generalizing here because I know some of you in this room are from the South, and there's some good quality cattle in the southern U.S., but I'll tell you this, there just flat aren't enough of them. We need more of them. What do most southern genetics need? Well, you can figure out the answer, but I will say that he's black and he walks on four legs. And that is your opportunity. That is your opportunity. Help this industry fix this problem. You'll make your sales money. You'll make the producers that buy your bulls money. You'll make me money. You'll make the packer happy, and you'll certainly make the consumer happy. And so I want to try to shine a flashlight, literally, on this problem in our industry because I don't think it's being talked about. And yet year after year after year, we see those same grade differentials that I showed you between the northern plains states, the Nebraska packing plants, and the South. So it's a big deal. It's something that we as cattle feeders and all cattle feeders that feed cattle in that Texas-Kansas region, we struggle with that all the time. Now here's one that will shake you up a little bit. More Angus beef from non-Angus parents. I think that's another one of our trends that we'll see more of in the future. And you're saying to me, well, that's genetically impossible. That can't happen. And of course, what I mean by that is really this. We're going to see more Angus beef produced from hybrid Angus bulls used on Angus-based cows. There just is no question about it. The trend is already set. It's not large yet, but it's moving. It's moving pretty fast. And it is going to impact the business. Now, why is that going to happen? Why is that going to happen? If you have a question about whether or not that is going to happen, let's look at some of the underlying factors that are driving it. Well, no success goes unchallenged. That's at the top of the list. And I'll guarantee you the rest of the industry has watched your success. Other seed stock producers, other breeds have watched your success. And they're not going to look over the fence and watch you sell bulls for more than they do forever. They're going to try to figure out a way to cash in or to tap into some of your success. And they're doing that. And the hybrid movement is part of that. It's a can't beat them, so let's join them. Let's get a piece of that action, kind of a philosophy. The other reason is that hybrid vigor does still matter at the cow-calf level of the business. It still is very important, and you can't get that by crossing Angus on Angus for multi-generations. And we could have an argument about whether or not that matters. You know, I'm sure that we've got some folks in the room that would like to believe or do believe that the Angus cow, you know, the straight-bred commercial Angus cow cannot be improved on. And that's fine, but the problem you've got in thinking that is most of the industry doesn't believe that. And I don't think you're going to get them convinced. You may get 10 or 20% of them convinced in the right environments. You might have a pretty good argument. But the problem you've got is you probably will not convince the other 80% of the industry that they don't need a cow with some hybrid vigor. So that's where the hybrid vigor portion is driving the hybrid movement. It certainly is. The other thing, structured crossbreeding is too hard. Most people don't do it very well, especially those small producers. Now, there's nothing wrong with the science behind it. I mean, Jim Gosey, who's on the program later, and many others have spent a lot of time researching that and tracking the value of it. That's great. You know, it works, but for most people in this convenience-oriented, time-crunch world, they don't execute structured crossbreeding programs very well, and that's why I feed some of the cattle that I showed you earlier, because they're not getting it done. And a hybrid bull is convenient. It is convenient, so that's another factor driving the trend. How about the muscle issue from Continentals? It's certainly something that they bring to the table. That's part of it as well. And here's a big one on the bottom line there. Those of us above your level and the commercial level of the industry, the commercial cow-calf level, really don't care, to be honest with you, how those Angus genes get in there. You guys care to some degree, maybe an awful lot, about how those genes get into the commercial sector. You'd certainly like it to be from a purebred Angus bull. But honestly, when you get to my level, I'd like those Angus genes to be there, but does it really matter to me in terms of the final economics of my business, how they got there? Hybrid source or purebred source? Probably not a whole lot, and the same would be true on up the chain. Now let's track the hybrid movement a little bit and put a few numbers around there and just see what's happening. I really didn't know what these numbers were going to look like until I did the research, but if you study the major continental breeds, it's moving pretty fast. It is moving pretty fast. Simmental would tell you that about 40% of their annual registrations this year would be Angus, Sim-Angus hybrids. The Gelby Balancers are 33%. Limousine is farther behind, but Kent Anderson, who's the executive of that association, when I asked him the question, he said it's 12% and it was moving very, very fast. And you can see a couple of the other smaller breeds in terms of the Keys and the Mains where they are relative to their Angus-based hybrid percentage. If you do the numbers, and I crunch the numbers on this, I come up with around 50,000 head this year of Angus hybrid registrations in those breeds. So if they were grouped all together, it would be a fairly sizable breed already today. Now, where is that going? I think it's going to 100,000 head by the year 2010. I think it will literally double in size in the next 5 years or so. And probably some of those registrations will come from what today are purebred Angus registrations. Maybe only 10 or 20,000 head of this total, but I don't think there's any question that number is going to grow, and if in fact I'm close to right here, and if those were grouped up in 5 years and called one breed, they would likely be the second largest breed out there behind Angus, and nobody else would be ahead of them. That's part of your success. That's part of the aftershock of the earthquake that you all have created, being so strong and successful and creating such tremendous demand for Angus beef. Now let's delve down, and I want to go in a little bit into the feedlot sector for a minute, because I'm sure, even though nobody stood up and said anything yet, I'm sure there's some skeptics in the room, and that's fine. I think we ought to think about these issues very critically and analyze them as best we can, and really try to put the pieces together with the focus on economics. So I'm going to delve down into the cattle feeding sector with a little quick survey data from my company. And here's what my guys who buy feeder cattle for us, and there's a bunch of them, said about the strengths of Angus cattle. We buy about 1.5 million feeder cattle a year and feed that many. Here's what they said. They said the things that you're very familiar with about your breed. Grade, quality grade, access to premium programs, uniformity, they eat a lot of feed, the crossing ability with other breeds, and marketability as well. But they also recognize some weaknesses too, and that's what this list is. Overfats, cutability problems before reaching a desired dressing percent. Higher percentage of Angus cattle, higher percentage of Angus genetics means lower yields, as in dressing percent, and a higher percentage of yield grade 4s and 5s. Not enough muscle for their outweights. I mean, you can read the list. The last one was from our CEO. Everything costs too much to him, so don't feel bad about that one. So there is some issue in terms of the higher percentage Angus cattle coming into the feedlot and selling on a grid. What is the ideal Angus percentage? Our guys said 50 to 75%. That is the amount of Angus influence they would like in an ideal world in every feeder steer and every feeder heifer that they put in their yard. So that's a tremendous statement. That's a tremendous endorsement from guys that feed a lot of cattle and know the value of genetics and see it in a lot of different programs. They see you as the main ingredient in making an ideal feeder steer. But they don't see you as the only ingredient. And so that's important to keep in mind as well. We are going to see and are already seeing more yield grade problems in the northern cattle in terms of those yield grade 4s and 5s, and I think we'll at least see that in the short term. This is kind of the other side of the slide that I showed you earlier. If you look at the same three states and you look at the yield grade 4s and 5s, this is data just from the first week of September or so. Cattle and certainly Angus cattle in the northern states. And it is becoming an increasing problem. Here about 2 or 3 years ago, the graders changed the way they're calling yield grade 4s. They probably did it more accurately than they've done it in the past. And that changed our business in terms of the economics of the higher percentage British and the higher percentage Angus cattle. It's become more of a problem for us than it was before. Now, what will we see less of? And I've got by my timer here, I have 12 minutes left, so I need to keep moving. What will we see less of? We've talked about some things we'd see more of. I think we'll see less opportunity to produce cattle and remain anonymous in this industry. There's just no question about that. With more source verification, with better understanding in terms of where our cattle are coming from in the feedlot sector and the packing sector, there's just going to be less opportunity for those to sit back and produce something that really doesn't have any value further up the chain, but they get blended in and nobody really ever knows it, and they can kind of sit there and do that for years. I don't see that happening, and honestly, I see at least a segment of your breed that is focusing probably too much on one-trait cattle, the low-input cattle that probably don't have a lot of value on going through the chain. Now, we understand that you all have to have a cow that works in the country, but don't forget about us on up the chain as you breed your cattle, and I think most of you certainly do, but be careful in terms of getting pulled off into a single trait focus, no matter what one trait it is. And I guess I am gonna bring up that low input group, because I see that as a concern in terms of over time they will be discovered. If their cattle don't perform on through the system and provide a desirable animal that will grow fast and efficiently and grade without getting too fat, they will not have the success that they might think they would. A less profit potential on commodity cattle that can't fit any branded program. I think that's a big one. It's here today. It's going to be more important in the future. We've got to produce a base product that we can add value to if we're really going to capture as much upside as possible. I think there's going to be less room for seed stock and commercial cattle that don't have any Angus influence, and that's just because of all the demand pull that we've talked about. Doesn't mean they have to be purebred Angus or straightbred Angus at the commercial level, but I think we will continue to see more discounts applied to those cattle that are less desirable and don't have the ability to fit higher-end programs and so forth. I think also, and we've talked some about the breed issues, we'll see less of a hard-line distinction between some of the breeds, and especially the continental breeds. As Angus grows and the hybrid programs within those breeds grow, the lines are going to blur, and we may wake up in not that many years, and all of a sudden, those continental breeds, which have warred against each other as much as they've warred against you, will find out they have as much in common as the things that separate them. And I think life will get interesting when we get to that point. So what does all this mean to you as an Angus breeder? I think it means a number of different things. I think, and there's some tremendously positive things and some challenges in this list. Angus genetics are going to be continually recognized, and even more recognized, I think, as being the main ingredient into the commercial cattle sector. Not the only ingredient, though, and that's very important for you all to think about. The most important ingredient, yes. The total solution, probably not. A whole new level of genetic accountability is on the way, too, for both commercial and seed stock producers. Randy talked about that. Tom Field talked about that. There's no question that that's coming down the pike because we're measuring value and really understanding our production, and the cattle are being tied back to sources more and more all the time. And so it is going to be a fact that the ability for somebody to produce and remain anonymous and not be tagged with whatever their cattle did, good or bad, I mean, those days are quickly coming to an end. So more accountability is on the way. The other thing is, and this is a huge challenge for you all, is you've got a tremendous diversity in terms of your bull customers. Some are very sophisticated. They have very high-level demands. They want very sophisticated information about the cattle. Others are not at that level of understanding the business, and you've got to serve them all because they are all customers and they're important. And I think really coming to grips with that and learning to work with that, educating yourself to be able to deal with those different clients, as I'm sure you're already doing, I see that getting even more important in the future. The next one, Angus genetics are going to continue to dominate the industry, and they'll win big in the years ahead. Some will be in a non-traditional form. Some will certainly come in a non-purebred form at the seed stock level. Overall, Angus genetics win big, but the way those genetics are packaged up and delivered to the commercial producer is definitely going to change. And I see that as taking shape like this, that we're going into a period where both purebreds and hybrids are increasingly going to be being sold side by side. And that will just be more of the nature of the industry. If you look at the ratio today, it's about 6-1, purebred to hybrid. I think that's going to change, and within 5 to 7 years, it could be 3-1, something like that. Doesn't mean the purebred sector is going away by any means, but it does mean it's going to be a lot more common to see hybrid bulls, Angus-based hybrid bulls, selling right alongside the purebreds. And if you still are having trouble with that, I want you to look at an industry that experienced some of the same things, though it's very different than our business. For years and years and years, the concrete business was dominated by a product that looked like this, Portland cement. And cement, of course, is the most important ingredient in concrete. Nobody can question that. Very well understood. So for years, we sat there and sold a product like this to consumers, and the world was good. Producers of cement liked their life very well. But you know what? Somebody over the fence was looking at them, and they said, I want a piece of that success. And it was probably some guy who was selling sand and decided he needed to add a little value to his sand. And so he said, you know what I'll do? I'll pre-mix that for the end user. I'll put cement and sand together in the right proportions, and I'll introduce a product that is more convenient and that satisfies the same demand. And so Quikrete and Saccrete and whatever other brand names out there were introduced, and I know this is not a perfect representation, but if you go into Home Depot right now, you won't see a lot of just bags of Portland cement anymore. You'll see products that are more convenient. I'm not suggesting that the Angus business will go completely that direction at all, but I am suggesting that this type of a new product introduction, for some of the same reasons and for a few others, is definitely happening out there. And I think most of us understand that people in this country are time crunched. They are very convenience oriented, and simpler is better. I don't think any of us ever knelt down on their knees and prayed, "Lord, please make my life more complicated." I don't think that ever happened. And so products that make our life simpler and still accomplish the same end goals are going to get some demand. They're going to get some use. There's just no question about it. In the end, again, I think what we see is the side-by-side, where we do see, you know, a new product that has substantial market share that is selling side-by-side by the purebred product. And both will be increasingly important. Both will be important in terms of the way Angus genetics are delivered in the years ahead. And I think the beef industry wins in that scenario. I like what I see happening. The whole movement and push toward more Angus genetics is very positive from my standpoint as a cattle feeder, because I think it will help make our industry better and more competitive. We need more grade in those southern cattle, as I mentioned. We need to compete worldwide. We need to be effective in maintaining our niche in the high-quality beef market worldwide. And one of the ways we do that, obviously, is to continue to push and grow in the area of more Angus beef. Thank you very much.